is Moscow. Good evening, everybody. You're tuned to the North American service of Radio Moscow, broadcasting to the East Coast on 16, 19, 25, and 500 meters. This broadcast begins daily at 23 hours Greenwich Mean Time on 14 frequencies, 17.70, 15.52, 15.42, 15.24, 15.10, 12.05, 12.03, 11.96, 11.92, 11.77, 11.75, 11.72, 11.71, and 0.60 megahertz. Transmission in Radio Moscow's North American service to the East Coast closes down at 04 hours Greenwich Mean Time.
For developing specialization and for cooperation in production for a period until 1990. In Miami, Florida, the police and National Guardsmen are victimizing the black population. An international conference of solidarity with the people of Kampuchea has opened in Phnom Penh. Those were the headlines. Now the news in detail. The Soviet Union and Romania have signed in Moscow a program for developing specialization and for cooperation in production for a period until 1990. The signing is the result of a visit to the Soviet Union by Romanian Prime Minister Ilie Vedets. He had talks with First Deputy Prime Minister Nicolae Tikhonov. Today, Ilie Vedets was received by the General Secretary of the Soviet Communist Party and President Leonid Brezhnev. Soviet Premier Alexei Kosygin took part. President Brezhnev said there are good opportunities to advance cooperation with Romania. An official statement says those taking part in the talks voiced satisfaction over the fact that the recent meeting of the Warsaw Treaty Organization laid a good foundation to consolidate peace in Europe and elsewhere through combined efforts. Premier Vedets has left for home. The Warsaw meeting between President Leonid Brezhnev and his French counterpart Valéry Giscard d'Estaing has drawn the approval of the world public, which welcomes the Soviet-French dialogue. The Polish Tribuna Ludu says that the meeting revealed the firm will of the participants to seek political solutions of the existing international problems. The French Humanité says the talks are to provide a fresh impetus to the easing of tension between East and West. The outcome of the Warsaw talks, however, has been received with irritation in Washington. State Secretary Edmund Muskie has severely criticized France. At a news conference in Washington, he accused France of having undermined trust and Atlantic solidarity because it agreed to negotiate in Warsaw, where initiatives aimed at reducing tensions were discussed. About 7,000 National Guardsmen, policemen, and armed white racists have launched an operation to appease the black population of Miami, Florida. Already 900 people have been arrested, and there are hundreds of injured people in Miami hospitals. 20 people have been killed in street clashes. The outburst of indignation follows the acquittal of the four white policemen who have beaten to death the black Arthur McDuffie. A local priest has said that the white America has victimized blacks as though they were beasts. It is a throwback to a situation 100 years ago, he said. The events in Miami have sparked racial disturbances in Wrightsville, Georgia. The General Secretary of the United States Communist Party, Gus Hall, and the Executive Committee Secretary, Angela Davis, have issued a statement on racial unrest in Miami, Florida. The acquittal of four policemen who murdered a black American, Arthur McDuffie, the statement says, served only as the detonator for the outburst of just anger. The root causes, however, are in the racial oppression and cruel exploitation of the black Americans. Gus Hall and Angela Davis call on all progressive-minded Americans to come out in defense of the rights of Miami's black Americans. In Islamabad, where the Islamic Conference is holding a session, many representatives have criticized the United States' anti-Arab and anti-Iranian policies. The political committee has censured the unsuccessful American armed aggression and the economic sanctions imposed on Iran. Pakistan, which is in the chair at the session, has managed to put its draft resolution on the so-called Afghan issue under discussion. In this connection, observers note it is a positive move on the part of the Palestine Liberation Organization to have called for recognizing the Afghan government led by Babrak Karmal. Democratic Yemen, the Palestine Liberation Organization, Syria, and Libya have protested over the participation of the leaders of Afghan counter-revolutionaries as members of the Iranian delegation. In the occupied West Bank of the Jordan, Israeli soldiers have been ordered to beat all in the streets during curfew. An opposition member of parliament, Uri Avneri, has said this in the Israeli parliament. He demanded an immediate investigation of outrages by soldiers. The soldiers are victimizing the Arabs who protest against the occupation regime and the building of Israeli settlements in the occupied lands. The United Nations Security Council has passed a resolution censuring Israel's refusal to revoke the decision on the deportation of three Palestinian leaders from the West Bank of the Jordan. On the 8th of this month, the council demanded permission for the mayors of El Halil and Halkul and a Muslim judge to return home, but the occupation authorities refused to obey. The resolution again contains the demand to ensure the speedy return of the Palestinian officials to the West Bank of the Jordan. Anti-government demonstrations in Gwangju, South Korea, involved 100,000 people on Tuesday. They were demanding the resignation of General Chun Doo-hwan, security forces commander and director of the local Central Intelligence Agency, and the man who has virtually usurped power in the country. The demonstrators also demanded democratic reforms. For a short time, they occupied the editorial offices of two newspapers and a radio station, but they were dispersed by troops. In yesterday's clashes, the soldiers killed 7 people. An international conference of solidarity with the people of Kampuchea has opened in Phnom Penh. Delegations from almost 50 countries, including the Soviet Union, are taking part. The initiative to hold the conference came from the World Peace Council. International organizations should continue giving their humane aid to Kampuchea, the country that has experienced the tragedy of rule by the bloody Pol Pot regime. This is the main conclusion of a report published in the United Nations headquarters in New York. The report was submitted by a special envoy of the United Nations Secretary General. It says that international relief organizations successfully cooperate with the Soviet Union, Vietnam, and other socialist countries. The Italian Olympic Committee has decided to send its team to the Moscow Olympics, despite pressure by the government, which has supported the American administration's proposed boycott of the Games. Earlier, an intent to send athletes to Moscow was stated by the National Olympic Committees of such West European countries as Britain, Austria, Belgium, the Netherlands, Denmark, Ireland, Iceland, France, and Sweden. The president of Finland, Urho Kekkonen, has said that the Olympic Games are the key event of the international sports movement and that they should be supported by all means. Interviewed for the Finnish magazine Me, President Kekkonen said that sports helps expand contacts and promote understanding between nations. The Finnish National Olympic Committee has already come out in support of the Moscow Olympics. President Kekkonen led the Finnish team to the Los Angeles Olympics in 1932. The Austrian Minister of Trade, Commerce and Industry, Josef Staribacher, has arrived in Moscow to attend a meeting of the Bilateral Commission for Economic, Scientific and Technical Cooperation. Since the commission was formed in 1968, trade between the two countries has grown six times. Soviet-Austrian business relations are based on long-term agreements. Cosmonauts Leonid Popov and Valery Rumin, working on board the Salyut orbital station for the seventh week now, today photographed the Earth's surface to study the planet's mineral resources. They photographed forests in Siberia to accurately determine the stocks of timber. It takes cosmonauts only 5 minutes to work with a camera to collect as much information as would take a plane 2 years or a ground expedition 80 years. A film festival of Asian, African, and Latin American countries has opened in Tashkent, Central Asia. It has attracted representatives from most countries in the three continents. The United Nations, the United Nations Educational, Scientific, and Cultural Organization, UNESCO, the Palestine Liberation Organization, and Chilean Patriotic Forces. President Brezhnev's message of greetings was read at the opening ceremony. With the aggravation of the world situation, it says, filmmakers can do a great deal to defend the humanitarian values of mankind. And now, to end this bulletin of news, here are the headlines again. The Soviet Union and Romania have signed a program for developing specialization and for cooperation in production for a period until 1990. In Miami, Florida, the United States police and National Guardsmen are victimizing the black population. An international conference of solidarity with the people of Kampuchea has opened in Phnom Penh. You're listening to the North American service of Radio Moscow. The Soviet-Romanian talks have ended in Moscow between the visiting Romanian Premier Ilie Verdes, the Soviet Prime Minister Alexei Kosygin, and other Soviet leaders. The Romanian government head was received by President Leonid Brezhnev. During their conversation, the Soviet president underlined there were considerable potentialities for further Soviet-Romanian cooperation, specifically in the economic field. The satisfaction was expressed over the recent decisions of the Political Consultative Committee of the Warsaw Treaty Organization, which could be a good platform for joint work towards stronger peace in Europe and elsewhere. The talk passed in a warm and comradely atmosphere. The Soviet Union and Romania have signed an economic agreement on specialization and cooperation. The talks and the agreement reaffirmed the mutual striving of the two countries to expand two-way ties in diverse fields.
These ties were described as fruitful by the Prime Ministers Kosygin and Verdes in their speeches at a luncheon given in the Kremlin in honor of the Romanian head of government. As the Soviet Prime Minister said, cooperation always served the common goals and interests of each country and the community as a whole. Ilie Verdes noted that in Romania, attention was constantly focused on ways of promoting the relations of friendship, solidarity and cooperation with the Soviet Union. Alexei Kosygin and Ilie Verdes described the program for cooperation and specialization in production agreed upon between the two countries for a period until 1990 as very important for the prospect of economic cooperation. The Soviet-Romanian talks got underway soon after the conference of the Political Consultative Committee of the Warsaw Treaty Organization. At a time when the international situation grew acute as a result of the aggressive policy of the imperialist forces, the Warsaw Treaty countries reiterated their adherence to the policy of peace,
European and international security. We challenged the militarist course of NATO, Alexei Kosygin noted, with a broad program of actions to consolidate trust and mutual understanding in international relations, and to settle the existing conflicts by political means. Romania, Ilie Verdet said, was fully determined to act in the future along with the Soviet Union and other Warsaw Treaty countries in the interests of ensuring the security of nations, halting the arms race, and settling controversial problems between states exclusively by peaceful means. The policy of the socialist countries, Alexei Kosygin emphasized, was above all a policy of peaceful endeavors. Ilie Verdes declared that in Romania, high credit was given to the Soviet people's achievements in the construction of communism and to the outstanding contribution made by the Soviet Union to the nation's struggle for peace, relaxation of tension, international cooperation, and progress. You are tuned to the North American service of Radio Moscow.
Our next item comes from Thomas Kolesnichenko, Pravda correspondent in New York, whose report resembles a war communique. Clouds of smoke envelop burning houses. There are sounds of shots. Hospitals are overcrowded with wounded people. All this is taking place in Miami, Florida. The police, reinforced by National Guardsmen, are trying to suppress protests by the local black population. It all started on Saturday evening when a 5,000-strong crowd of blacks gathered in protest over the acquittal by an all-white jury of four white policemen who had beaten to death a 33-year-old black, Arthur McDuffie. The protesting blacks were surrounded by heavily armed policemen, and when the demonstrators refused to disperse, the policemen used specially trained dogs and tear gas. In the clash that followed, the police used clubs and opened fire. As a result of the incident, a total of 19 persons were killed and some 350 injured. The riots had spread to the whole black community in this area. After trying to play down the incident, the American papers are now wondering about the causes of this unexpected explosion of racial hatred. The papers blame the blacks for starting the riots, but a different view is expressed by a black activist in Miami, Marvin Ann. The acquittal of the killer policeman by the jury was only a spark that had set off the flames of racial conflict that had been kindling for a long time. Blacks in Miami, as all over the United States, are traditionally regarded as second-rate citizens, and this has been reflected in their falling living standards. In Miami, the percentage of jobless blacks is twice as high as among the whites, reaching 17%. 38% of the local blacks live below the official poverty level, as compared with only 10% among the local whites. As for the tragic death of Arthur McDuffie, it offers a shocking example of cruelty and hypocrisy of American law. The black motorcyclist was stopped by four policemen for an alleged traffic offense. He was brutally beaten and died in hospital a few hours later. His killers filed a report of a traffic accident, but eyewitnesses who happened to be on the spot told a different story. Nevertheless, all the four white policemen were found not guilty. Commenting on the incident, one of the black leaders, Mr. Range, said they have no more confidence in American justice or in the American system in general. He said black Americans are treated as slaves. The latest tragedy is not an isolated incident of this kind. One of the four killer policemen, Alex Marrero, took part in a similar crime in January 79. At that time, several blacks died in police custody. They were beaten to death. In February of last year, the Miami police raided the home of Nathaniel Lafleur, a black schoolteacher. He and his son were savagely beaten. Also in Miami, a 22-year-old black youth was killed in the street in October last year. The killer was acquitted by the local jury. Cases of police brutality such as these are many, and they happen not only in Miami, but all over the United States. There was an item from Thomas Kolesnichenko, Pravda correspondent in New York. This is the North American service of Radio Moscow.
With only 2 months until the opening ceremony of the 21st Olympics in Moscow, millions of sports fans in the Soviet Union and throughout the world are naturally impatiently awaiting the event. But of course, particular hopes are placed on the games by those who are to play the main role in that great sports festival, the Olympic participants. And they are busy now preparing. In the life of every athlete, the Olympic Games take a special place. Participation is a great honor, and the Olympic medals won in competitions with the strongest rivals are the highest award. It's all the more a pity to actually be out of the game without even having a chance to take part. Yet, this seems to be the situation America's athletes find themselves in. Years of hard training and hopes for Olympic victories are all in vain because of the administration's campaign to boycott the Moscow Olympics. In its campaign, the White House has resorted to unprecedented pressure and blackmail, threatening financial and legal sanctions, and even accusing those who disagree with its line of nothing less than lack of patriotism. America's National Olympic Committee yielded to this pressure and decided not to send a U.S. team to Moscow. The cynical and hypocritical attempt to use the Olympic movement for political purposes is unprecedented in the history of amateur sports. The hypocrisy of Washington's current line is even more apparent if one recalls that in the past, precisely the USA was the most articulate about the need of keeping politics out of sports. Suffice it to recall events during the 1968 Olympics in Mexico City, when two black American track and field athletes were presented with awards and the U.S. national anthem was played, both men raised their right fists to protest against the discrimination of blacks in the United States. The White House and the U.S. press reacted then by expressing great indignation against those two athletes and stressing that the Olympic Games were no place for politics. Now, apparently, the men in Washington prefer not to recall that incident, since the U.S. leadership's sports policy has done a turnabout face. One gets the impression that this turnabout in Washington's policy line and the whole campaign of boycotting the Moscow Olympics are designed, above all, to serve the interests of President Carter's election marathon. With the help of these moves, he apparently hopes to rally the voters under the banner of nationalism and anti-Sovietism and simultaneously appear in their eyes as a strong leader. A U.S. journalist was absolutely right when he acidly observed that the president, having failed to deal with Ayatollah Khomeini and inflation, was taking it out on the athletes. Whether President Carter will win in his bid for re-election is still unknown, but one can say with certainty who'll lose as a result of his line. First and foremost, it's the interests and hopes of America's athletes that'll be sacrificed. According to the runner, Craig Virgin, 90% of them are participating in the Moscow Games. For most of these athletes, the decision of America's National Olympic Committee is a personal tragedy. The leading U.S. basketball player, Carol Blazechowski, who gave up a professional career to go to the Olympics, pointed out that the National Olympic Committee's decision had killed her morally. From childhood, she had dreamed of becoming an Olympic champion. Now that hope was dashed. Another U.S. basketball player, Chris Kirshner, stressed that all the athletes had been preparing extensively for the Olympics, but now there was nowhere to go, it appeared. The decision was tantamount to crushing her sports career and personal plans. Chris's parents had been saving every cent to give her the opportunity to train. They were economizing on everything they could, but now this all turned out to be in vain. The U.S. press observes that such sentiments are typical for America's athletes. For many, the trip to Moscow was the only chance to take part in the Olympic Games. And for some of them, for instance, for a high jumper Dave Hager, the decision of America's Olympic Committee was such a blow that he decided to give up sports for good. National Olympic Committee member Robert Close has pointed out that the pressure that Carter was putting on the committee and his ultimatum are a gross violation of the athlete's civil rights. The attempts to justify the need for a boycott by referring to national security interests are absurd. He noted that America's athletes were simply being used as pawns in the president's political game. The U.S. administration's line is dealing a blow not only at the athletes, but also at the hundreds of thousands of sports fans who dreamed of seeing the performance of America's famous athletes. America's sports fans will apparently suffer twice. They'll not only fail to see their country's representatives among the Olympic participants, but also most likely be deprived of the possibility to see the Olympic competitions in general. Under White House pressure, the NBC gave up its plans to telecast the games. What many American sports fans feel in this connection is borne out by the letters received by Radio Moscow. For instance, I should like to say that I also appreciated the program schedule with a picture of the Little Russian Bear and Olympic symbol. That may be, sadly, all I will see of the Summer Olympics. Being a fan of the Olympic movement, I feel strongly about this. Carter has refused to let U.S. companies to deal in Olympic products, and we will get no coverage of the Summer Games. That letter came from Mr. Tom Conrad of Franklin Park, Illinois. Now here's comment from Mr. Tom Daly of Westerville, Ohio. Here's what he wrote in his letter. President Carter definitely does not speak for the majority of Americans. We wanted to see our athletes at the games. Also, we wanted to see the games on TV from Moscow. It will be very sad for us not to be able to see the events, interesting as they will be. The United States administration's line of boycotting the Moscow Olympics is damaging not only the interests of the athletes and the sports fans. One of the most serious consequences is the threat of a possible splitting of the International Olympic Movement into two or several blocks. Actually, that would lead to an end to the very spirit and aim of the movement, that of promoting mutual understanding and friendship between peoples. Many of our listeners are aware of this threat and express their alarm. The only thing a boycott will do is probably destroy the Olympic movement forever, not to mention aggravate world tensions in general. That was written in a letter from Mr. Neil Hagstrom of Boise, Idaho. Anxiety is also expressed by Miss Martha Bradford, a listener from Chattanooga, Tennessee. I hate the Cold War business, she writes. It scares me. And just when the Olympics are to be held in Moscow. Indeed, the White House line of boycotting the Olympics may, in the long run, lead to a new aggravation of the international situation. Former President Gerald Ford observed that the current U.S. administration is creating crises so as to fight them afterwards. But the crisis that Washington is trying to create in the Olympic movement can lead to a chain reaction, which, in its turn, will complicate international relations and become yet another step along the road of return to the Cold War. All these consequences hardly justify what Mr. Carter is doing in the interest of his election campaign. One can sooner agree with a view expressed by Lord Kilannon, president of the International Olympic Committee. He pointed out that the IOC should seriously think of changing the timing of the Olympic Games so as to avoid their coinciding with a presidential election year in the United States.
You're tuned to the North American service of Radio Moscow. Now here's a story by Canadian journalist Bert White.
Kiev, the capital of the Ukrainian Soviet Socialist Republic, spreads picturesquely along a bank of the Dnieper River. A boat trip down Dnieper is an enjoyable experience. It is the third longest river in Europe, and it's one